Welcome to the ADAA podcast about body dysmorphic disorder. Today we're talking with Dr. Catherine Phillips at Butler Hospital and Brown University Medical School. Dr. Phillips, let me ask you the first question. What are the clinical features of body dysmorphic disorder, or BDD?
Well, the core feature of BDD is that people worry and obsess about perceived flaws in their physical appearance. So they think that these parts of their body look abnormal, defective, flawed in some way, when in reality, they look normal. So they may obsess that their skin is terribly scarred, or that they have very obvious acne, or that their hair, it doesn't look right. It's too curly. It's too straight. They're going bald. They have too much body or facial hair. Nose concerns are very common. It can affect any part of the body. And again, they just are very preoccupied with the idea that these body areas look very abnormal, and to others, they look fine. In addition, the preoccupation with the perceived flaws in appearance causes clinically significant distress or interferes with their functioning. So that's the key feature of BDD. I should mention that in addition, most of these patients do things like try and hide the body area. They camouflage, in other words, with hats or sunglasses, or cover their face with their hair. They may check mirrors frequently. They may excessively groom, for example, excessively style their hair or shave. They may pick at their skin, ask other people if they look okay. So these are all clues that a person may have BDD.
How common is this disorder?
Well, body dysmorphic disorder appears to be relatively common. So studies that have examined its prevalence in large surveys have found that a little bit under 1% of the population to as many as 2.4% of the population has body dysmorphic disorder currently. Now, the problem is, though, that this is a very under-recognized and under-diagnosed disorder. It's often very secretive. Patients who suffer from BDD, and they suffer tremendously, are often reluctant to mention to their therapist that they have these concerns about their appearance. And I think it's usually because they're embarrassed, they're ashamed, they think they're going to be judged negatively and considered vain or superficial. But BDD is not vanity. It's a very serious mental illness.
Are comorbid anxiety and other mental disorders frequently seen with BDD?
Yes. A majority of patients with body dysmorphic disorder at some point in their life have major depressive disorder, which often appears to result from the BDD. Patients will say things like, well, if you looked like a monster and you thought everyone was laughing at you and rejecting you because of how you look, wouldn't you get depressed? Now, it's not always, you know, it's often hard to figure out whether depression is due to another disorder or not, but there's often a lot of depression, a lot of substance use disorders, and many patients say they're self-medicating. The distress and the anxiety that their preoccupation causes them. Comorbid social phobia is very common. More than a third of patients also have social anxiety disorder, and about a third have obsessive compulsive disorder in addition to BDD. So it is important when you see a patient with BDD to ask about these and other comorbid disorders.
Is there a risk of suicide, and if so, how high is it?
Unfortunately, the risk of suicide among patients with BDD appears remarkably high. We have very little data, but the data that we have suggest that people with BDD are more than 30 times more likely to kill themselves than people in the general population. This rate is higher than that for any other mental disorder. Now, that's a preliminary finding. We need further research to confirm this finding, to find risk factors. We know that people with BDD do have many risk factors for suicide. They suffer tremendously from their symptoms, and they often feel ostracized by others and mocked by others, and they have other risk factors as well. About 24 to 28% actually attempt suicide at some point in their life. And it appears that patients with BDD are more likely to think about suicide or attempt suicide if they have more severe BDD symptoms, They're more likely to attempt suicide if they also have a substance use disorder or if they have comorbid PTSD. So it is important for all therapists who work with these patients to carefully ask about suicidal thinking and to closely monitor patients. Fortunately, treatments we have seem to be very helpful in getting patients better and feeling less suicidal.
Well, good. I was going to ask you about treatment next. When patients seek treatment, when you see a BDD patient in your practice, do they come in for treatment with that? You mentioned that they might be embarrassed, or do they come in for conditions other than that disorder?
I think it depends on the patient. Many of the patients we see are seeking treatment specifically for BDD, especially if they consider it their primary problem, the one that's most distressing or problematic for them. But, you know, they may not talk about the BDD symptoms specifically. It's just so much easier for a patient to say, you know, I feel depressed or I feel nervous around other people than to say, I think my penis is too small. It's very embarrassing sometimes to talk about it. So they may be seeking treatment for it, but reluctant to talk about the BDD symptoms specifically. And so it's often up to the therapist, the clinician, to ask. And so I'd suggest that when you see a new patient, to always ask a simple question like, are you worried about your appearance in any way? Are you unhappy with how you look? And if so, you know, then ask some follow-up questions to see if the DSM-4 criteria for BDD are met.
So in your experience, what have been effective treatments?
We're working very hard to develop effective treatments for BDD. And the good news is that there are two types of treatment that available research suggests are often effective for BDD. And I talk about both of these treatments at some length in my book on BDD, The Broken Mirror. One is the serotonin reuptake inhibitor medications, the SRIs. In two controlled trials and a number of open-label trials appear effective for a majority of patients with body dysmorphic disorder. They can be very helpful in diminishing the preoccupation and the associated compulsive behaviors, diminish depression, suicidality, help patients function and feel better. So that's the SRIs are currently considered our first-line medication treatment for BDD. And the recommended therapy at this time is cognitive behavioral therapy that is targeted specifically to BDD symptoms. So we use, first, you know, there's a fair amount of education about BDD. Some of these patients can be hard to engage in treatment because they think they really are ugly. So a lot of them actually prefer cosmetic treatment like surgery and dermatologic treatment. So it can be a challenge to get them, you know, to accept treatment for BDD, but many of them will. And so we provide a lot of psychoeducation. We may need some motivational interviewing to engage them in therapy. And then the core aspects of the CBT are cognitive restructuring to help them identify their dysfunctional, unhelpful thoughts and beliefs about their appearance and identify cognitive errors in their thinking and develop more accurate and helpful beliefs. We also focus on response ritual prevention to help them cut back on and gradually stop the compulsive behaviors that just feed the BDD preoccupations. So things like mirror checking, reassurance seeking, skin picking, hair plucking, all the various behaviors that they do excessively in a futile attempt to feel better about how they look. We also include exposure and behavioral experiments to help them feel more comfortable around other people. The exposure exercises usually involve social situations. So we can, you know, develop various hierarchies and help them gradually enter different social situations of increasing difficulty and help them feel more comfortable. We also do some work with mirrors, perceptual retraining, to help them develop a more holistic and non-judgmental view of how they look while not compulsively checking the mirror, because that's a very, you know, self-defeating behavior. So.
Can you talk a little bit about motivational interviewing?
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, it's a technique that's being developed for quite a number of disorders and appears very helpful across disorders to help engage reluctant patients in treatment. It's a non-judgmental stance that the therapist takes to help the patient make a commitment to the treatment and stay engaged in the treatment once they begin. You don't strong arm the patient. You help them think through pros and cons of being of considering treatment. Because so many patients with BDD have what we would consider delusional beliefs about their appearance. They're completely certain that they really do look deformed. Some cases they say that they look like a monster or the elephant man. In other cases, it's, I just look ugly. But they're often completely convinced of this or fairly convinced. And so sometimes they doubt that we can help them because we don't have a surgeon's scalpel or we're not, we don't do dermabrasion. And those treatments, by the way, do not appear helpful for BDD and can actually make BDD worse. So it can be challenging to engage these patients in treatment. And I think a non-judgmental, empathic stance, offering hope to these patients that the treatments we can offer are likely to be helpful, are some things we can do to help them get engaged in the treatment.
Is research going in any particular direction that you see?
Oh, we need so much research on BDD. It's the sky's the limit because this is a disorder that's been described for well over a century, described around the world, and yet research is relatively young. Now, we have made tremendous progress in the past. It's now close to 20 years, but there's so much more that needs to be done. I would say we need research on every aspect of BDD. We need research in children and adolescents. This is a disorder that usually starts in the early teenage years. And it can really derail adolescent development. Kids drop out of school. I've seen so many patients who drop out of high school and sit housebound, isolated in their bedroom for the next 20 years because they think they look so ugly. They don't go out on a date. They don't get a job. They don't graduate from school. We need more research on risk behaviors, suicidality, violence, substance use in these problematic substance use in these patients. And we need much more treatment research. We need more studies of SRIs, other medications, more studies of CBT, additional types of therapy that may be helpful. We need translational research. We need to understand better the neurobiology of this disorder, risk factors for this disorder, so that hopefully in the future we can prevent it from ever occurring.
That would be nice.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Phillips. Is there anything you'd like to add to this other than the great need for research?
Well, I would just encourage clinicians to be aware of BDD and ask all patients about it. Patients with BDD want their therapist to ask them if they have it. They may be embarrassed and ashamed to raise it themselves, but many of them are relieved if you raise the topic and give them hope that treatment is available, that they're not alone, that this is a bona fide, well-known disorder that other people have, and that treatment's very likely to be helpful for them.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you again, Dr. Phillips.
Thank you.
This is Jean Tycro for ADAA.